Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 233, and we're going to talk about the most unlikely topic ever for somebody producing a podcast, and that is why you shouldn't listen to me. We're also going to do a product review of zipper locks, a very handy thing that's not quite what you expect, a tale from the road involving chickadees in a video game, and a bit about fluid leaks that is going to be a guest spot. Yes, a couple of folks asked if I would like their help in the podcast, and I got to speaking with them, and I said sure. So the tech talk part of this podcast, which I'm going to put towards the end, is going to be done by some other folks. I'll introduce them when we get there. But anyway, I hope you like their stuff. Yeah, this kind of the point of my main thing here with the podcast this week is to have you not listen to me, which seems a little strange given that I have a podcast with 230-something episodes. But here's the point. Van life, the thing we're doing, buying vans, acquiring vans, however we might, and building them out, which I know some of you will buy your vans built out by professionals. I'm going to set you aside for a moment. But those of us building out vans and other vehicles, we need to understand that the idea of an expert in van life is very ambiguous at best. I want to say at the outset that I am not an expert in van life. I'm not an expert in wiring electrics for a van. I'm not an expert in insulation. I'm not an expert in air conditioning or heating. I'm not an expert in suspension. None of it. I am a guy with a van and a truck and a few RVs. I seem to have a collection now. That's all I am. But because of the nature of human experience and how we interact socially, and the fact that I have a platform that I've created for myself, because anybody can do this, I am seen as an expert, I'm seen as someone to listen to, and I'm not. I mean, I promise you guys that I will not lie to you in as much as I'm capable of it. In fact, let me jump right in here with some corrections. I've got three corrections for this week. The first is, 2 weeks ago, I kept pronouncing the name of the fancy toilet that has gotten a lot of buzz lately wrong. I kept calling it Jukla. That's an entirely different company that has nothing to do with toilets. The name of the company is Joolca. J-O-O-L-C-A. They're an Australian company making camping gear, and they've come up with this innovative camping toilet that can be a chemical toilet or a composting toilet. See, I've learned I'm pronouncing that right now. Or just a separating toilet. It's kind of fancy. Anyway, go back 2 episodes if you want to learn about that, but I apologize for getting their name wrong. Joolca. J-O-O-L-C-A. Joolca. Okay, that was the first one. Second one, on the news last week or the week before, I think it was last week, I was talking about how in the UK they're going to start canceling RV driving privileges for people over 70. It turns out that the article, which I now have linked in the show notes, that I was using is one of these kind of tabloid, over-the-top kind of publications. And while there is probably some language in the DVLA code, which the DVLA is like our registry or our DMV, stands for Driver and Vehicle Licensing Agency, in practice this is not a thing. In fact, I had folks from the UK write me and say, "What? What is this?" So that story is probably not worthy of mentioning in the news, and I apologize for that. And then the third is I have gotten feedback for how I pronounce certain words. This will continue on. We've already done with the composting thing. Now we need to face the word tour. Tour. T-O-U-R rhymes with four and poor. Unless you're from certain parts of the United States where they pronounce those words with two syllables for some reason and say tour and poor, but I've never heard them say fewer. I've heard them say fur, but I say four. And it has been suggested to me that I should stop mispronouncing the word tour. And no, I'm not gonna. I'm sorry. I'm drawing the line here. You might have got me on composting and composting, but tour is defensible. That is a defensible pronunciation because it rhymes with poor and four, and I've never heard anyone say fewer. maybe there is somebody. Anyway, you know, I mean, pronunciations change. There's accents. I will do my best to communicate clearly, but I'm not going to go through the effort of trying to say tour because it just sounds wrong to me, and it's not that important. So, take that hell. Anyway, there you go. Back on topic here. I'm not an expert, and I'm going to go so far as to say that there really aren't any experts. I mean, there are names that come up in van life, like Bob Wells and Greg Virgo, who produce excellent content that inform a lot of people. I mean, they're almost essential watching if you're going to be building out a van and stuff. But are they experts? Well, how do we judge if somebody's an expert in something that isn't a degreed field? You know, there's nobody who has a degree in van life. Nobody's had any formal education. Yeah, there are some online courses and programs you can take for like how to build out a van and stuff, but it's not like they're accredited by anybody. They're just other people saying, hey, we're experts, learn from us. And some of these are quite good. I am not trying to suggest that the content out there is all bad and untrustworthy. I'm trying to suggest that the onus is on you to determine the difference between somebody who knows what they're talking about and someone who doesn't. Or, more subtly, someone who knows what they're talking about, but isn't talking about your particular circumstances. So Greg Virgo, let's bring him up. V-I-R-G-O-E, he's on YouTube, I think he's from the UK. A great videos, a very precise builder. You can learn a lot from him. And I don't disagree with anything he does, except for one thing, which is whether you should install vapor barriers or not. I'm not going to get into that complex topic. I disagree. I don't think you should install vapor barriers. He thinks you should, and he thinks he's proven it why. In this circumstance where you have me saying one thing and him saying another, and I'm going to put him on a much higher pedestal than I am, okay? If the two of us disagree, in general, you should probably listen to him. But we disagree. And you, as somebody new to van life, says, well, this guy says this guy says that. How can we tell which one's right? And the answer is, you kind of can't. You have to employ your own skills of critical thinking to determine which advice fits your situation the best. Now, my approach to van life is not one of building the most perfect, bulletproof, best van ever. And that is the approach of some others. My approach is that I want to be practical. I want to be optimal. I want to be real. I want folks to consider that this vehicle they're building is temporary. This is not a Picasso or a Mozart symphony. It is something that you're going to have for a while and use, and then you're not going to have it. And I want to tailor resources around that. Other folks have a completely different take on van life. They want to build the best possible thing they can and spare all expenses. We're just going to go for it. We're going to build the best thing that ever could possibly be built. And that is valid too. It's just different. So one of the best ways to combat this problem of finding an expert guru and doing whatever they say to your detriment is to consider a whole bunch of sources. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. If you're going to build out your own van, don't find one guy or gal who has built out a van and is talking about ways to do it. Find a dozen. Expose yourself to as many different circumstances as possible. For example, on the insulation issue, you can find as many opinions on insulation as you can find people using insulation. I am on the minimalist side. I believe that practically and optimally, you want to not spend a whole lot of time on insulation because it's not that important. Others will say that 80% of your van build depends on the insulation, and you got to worry about thermal bridging and stuff like that, which I just think is overkill. Neither of us is right. We're just different perspectives, and that is the big lesson for what I'm trying to talk to you about here today. Perspective, context, these things matter. I don't think there are many people out there who are talking about van life who are lying to you or who are trying to steer you wrong. Some of them may be too excited about van life to realize they're giving bad advice. I'm probably guilty of that from time to time. And then finally, we will talk about the last group, and that is the folks who are just trying to make money. They're just trying to market themselves as a guru so that you'll follow them, and they can promote products to you, and And you see this an awful lot with dietary supplement folks. They'll tell you about all these scary things and then try to sell you their own things. Those are the people that, in my opinion, you should avoid. And there are a few of those in van life. And you can find those folks mainly because they're mostly positive all the time, or conversely, they're all scary all the time. Van life is so dangerous. Oh, you need to buy this. But it always ends with, you need to buy this. And I can tell you from experience that if you're somebody who is producing content, you will get approached by companies wanting you to hawk their products. They'll send you free ones. There's all kinds of ways to do it. You know, it's interesting. Wonder Hussy just ran into this. She was talking about it on Facebook. She doesn't know what to do. A company sent her a product and said, if you make us a review video on this product, we will send you a check for X amount of dollars. I'll stay out of her personal business. So she said, sure. So she got the product and tried it out, and it's junk. It is junk. She doesn't like the product. But they're offering her enough money to make the video that she's pressured to make the video. And, you know, I feel bad for her because she's actually making her living. Her entire income comes from the content she's creating. And now she's in the situation where she either has to throw away a big chunk of her monthly earnings and be honest, or do the thing that they want her to do, which is no small thing, because if she doesn't do it, word will get around that she's not a reliable content creator for the advertisers. If she does do it, she's kind of screwing over her audience. And it's a tough situation to be in. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, oh, the right thing to do is that she should just not do it. And that's what I would do. But I'm not in her situation. I am not depending on income from my podcast to pay the monthly bills. She is. So I have to give her credit for bringing this to the fore to begin with. I mean, she's talking publicly about the situation she's in. But knowing that those situations exist helps inform you of the idea that you can't be sure that there is such a thing as a van life expert. To me, ultimately, van life is very personal and everyone's circumstances are different. So in the end, I recommend very broad exposure to all these different ideas and context. Absorb them all, and then you will develop your own vision for what's right for you. In the meantime, don't listen to me. I'm just a guy with a van. But if you are going to listen to me, and you disagree with anything, or you think I've gotten something wrong, please let me know, because I want to fix it, other than pronunciations of the word tour. You can get hold of me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. A special thank you to Michael and Kyle, who are off on some grand adventures, for helping to keep this podcast ad-free. They both went to buymeacoffee.com/builttogo and bought me some diesel. And that one simple act means that there will be no ads on this podcast for a while now, because I've gotten enough support that we're in good shape. If you would like to support the podcast, along with all the others who every month donate, please visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. And we will continue on ad-free. Thank you. Product review. I bought these little things years ago now, and while they're not specifically a van life thing, I think they could be useful for folks in many cases, because we're traveling, right? We're always in new situations, and we're often in crowds, and, you know, stuff happens in crowds. Tourists are targets for pickpockets and such, and this just came up in the group that I'm taking to the Danube in a couple weeks. A lot of the cities on the Danube have a big pickpocket problem. It's true everywhere. I'm not picking on them at all. I'm going to tell you about an anti-pickpocketing device that I've been using, and, well, so far, I haven't been pickpocketed. This is a zipper lock, and it's called that, but, well, it isn't really a lock. Interesting little thing. So it's made by a company called Bobino, B-O-B-I-N-O, and it is a disc. It's a plastic disc that breaks apart, almost like a communion wafer. If you can think of that gesture, that's actually how you open this thing. And it has two pieces. One piece attaches to each side of a zipper. You need a kind of zipper that has two zippers that come together. And it just locks them together. And this does two things. One, it keeps your zippers together so they won't accidentally open. But the other is that they prevent pickpockets, not because they're an actual lock, you don't need a key to open them, but because they're unusual and you have to know the right motion to open them, and that's not obvious by looking at it. Now, after a bit of practice, it takes me nothing to open and close this thing. It's second nature to me. But for most pickpockets, they're going to see this and they're going to be like, that's too much work, or I don't know how to deal with that, or I'm just going to go after an easier target. So I do think this is effective at preventing pickpockets. And remember, you know, we hear the term pickpocket, but pickpockets are very sophisticated now. They will distract you, and they will work in pairs, and they're not necessarily going after what's in your pocket. They are very interested in backpacks because they can unzip and take things out of a backpack without you even knowing it. These locks make that more difficult. Now, they're a little bit expensive for what they are. I mean, they're just plastic with a couple of rings, and they're $14 for two. So they're $7 a piece. So I thought, all right, for $14, I compared it to an actual lock, like a combination lock or a key lock. If you compare it to that, the price makes sense. And I like them. They give me just a little bit feeling of security that if I'm wearing my backpack on my back, there's nobody messing with it back there. And I've never had them come apart. I have shipped luggage with them. I've taken them all over the world. I took them all over South America and Antarctica, and they never opened. They did exactly what they were supposed to, and they also didn't break, even in freezing temperatures. So I have a link in the show notes. They are by Bobino, B-O-B-I-N-O, and I'm sorry, the best thing I can come up with is that they look like a communion wafer that's dark colored, and you attach it to both of your zippers, and then you break the communion wafer to open it. That's the best analogy I can come up with. Take a look. Tales from the Road. So, boy, 2016, I was playing a video game called The Long Dark. I'm still playing this video game. There are very few video games that have stuck with me that long, but I've been playing this video game now for 8 years. I'm still engrossed in it, and side note on the video game. The Long Dark is a very interesting video game where you find yourself in the Canadian wilderness in the deep winter, and something has gone wrong with the world. And there's two modes. There's a game mode where you're trying to find the answer to a mystery, and then there is a sandbox mode, which is by far the more important, and you're just trying to survive. That's it. There's no goal other than you're trying to survive another day. Anyway, I love the game. I love the artwork. It's by Hinterland Studios. Go ahead and look for it if you're into those kind of video games. However, I was so into this video game that I thought, boy, wouldn't it be nice to actually go to a cabin in the woods in the snow and play this video game in kind of the same environment that the game takes place in. And my wife was playing it at the time too, so she said, sure, let's go. So I found an Airbnb place that was a log cabin up near Egg Harbor, Wisconsin. And this was February, so it was definitely winter. And we drove up there and I had just a nice visit, and there was a few things about that visit I wanted to mention in this Tales of the Road. First off is we didn't have a plan. We just picked a place we'd never been, and we drove around until we found interesting stuff. And the two most interesting things we found were, first, there was a park up there, and I don't remember the name of the park. I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast, not that it's going to help you, that so many people have been going there with sunflower seeds that the local population of chickadees knew that people had sunflower seeds. And so you can go out in the woods anywhere near the parking lot or the ranger stations or anything like that and just stand there with black oil sunflower seeds in your hand. And the chickadees would come out of the woods and fly and land on your hand and eat right out of them. I think it would be fascinating to learn the story of how all the chickadees were trained for that and how many generations ago that happened. You know, the chickadees are learning. New chickadees hatch every year. They learn from the older chickadees that this is a thing to do. When did it first start? When was the first chickadee to figure out that people had food? Anyway, it's a lot of fun. There's just this weird little kind of tickly feeling when they walk on your hands that's kind of fun. So that would be enough for me to tell you this tale. But the other thing was we pulled across like a winter carnival. And you know, think about it. This is northern Wisconsin in the winter. It's cold. It's dark. What do people do to have fun? And they do what I think everybody should do, is they celebrate the winter. Don't hide from it. Celebrate it. Get out there and do stuff. This is what I found in Vermont, where summers in Vermont are wonderful, but it's the winter that Vermont really comes alive. Well, that's what they did here in Wisconsin, too. And we stumbled across this. We had no idea it was there. We were just looking for lunch in town. And everybody had all these booths and games and activities set up on the land and on the frozen lake. And they were doing very odd activities, in my opinion. One of the things was a toilet toss, where you used a toilet seat as a ring and tried to land it somewhere. Another thing was the, and I still have the ticket from this, the wheel of meat, where you bought a ticket and they would spin the wheel and you would win meat. What kind of meat? Well, I don't know, because I didn't win. But those who won went away with a package of sausages or some beef jerky, or there was a big prize that was like a side of beef or something. Which, given that we were driving my wife's Scion IQ, I'm glad we didn't win the side of beef. That would have been difficult. But my favorite thing that they had, which is probably a little not animal-friendly, were the minnow races. Now, minnows are, it's difficult to talk about because I know people have feelings about animals. I have feelings about animals. And yet, we keep animals in different classifications. You know, there's like animals that are pets, there's animals that are wildlife, there's animals that are food, and then there are animals that are bait. You can go to any fishing shack anywhere in the Great Lakes, and you will find people selling live minnows for bait. And these minnows here were bait minnows, but they weren't being used for bait, at least not yet. They were being used for races. People were gambling on racing minnows. And the way this worked is they had gutters, like house gutters, maybe 20 feet long, set up in this structure, and they had, let's say, six of these next to each other. I don't remember the number. And they were filled with water. And then at one end, there was this little plastic thing that kind of made a little compartment there that held a fish. And at the other end, there was a line painted, and, you know, that was the finish line. And they would go, 3, 2, 1, go! And you would pick up your plastic thing and let the fish go. And then somehow encourage it to swim to the other end of the gutter. There was no current. The water wasn't flowing. So you had to encourage your minnow to swim to the other end. And it was fascinating to see the things people would do. Some people would like say, go minnow, go, go. No, no, the other way, go, 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 go. And other people would be like banging on the gutter. And then someone would yell at them because you're not supposed to do that. Other people would be like flicking water at them. Some guy put his hand over the minnow like it was a predator. And that actually seemed to work. It made the predator move away from his hand. So he just kind of walked down the whole gutter like that. And he was on one of the ends, so he could. The folks in the middle couldn't do that. And maybe not the most fairly figured out game in the world, but I had fun, I'm sorry to say, and I apologize to folks who think it's cruel to the minnows, but my perspective was, I think these minnows would rather be doing this than be dangling on a hook in the frozen lake, which was their intended fate. Anyway, the point of this whole story is, and it's a very important lesson for me and one that's really helped me do van life, is you don't need a plan. I know there are people out there who like to plan, and that's their fun is in the planning. I get that. I'm like that to some degree. My dad's fun in the long trips he takes is to see the plan come to fruition. He'll make a big elaborate plan, and if everything goes off without a hitch, that's a win for him. But another way to do travel is to pick a place and spend time there and don't plan anything. Just explore. See what happens. And in many ways, those are my favorite kind of trips. And this trip to frozen Wisconsin is one of my favorites. I had a great time just experiencing everything up there. So this is all in the Egg Harbor region of Wisconsin, if you'd like to explore. And if you go there in the summer, you'll have a completely different experience. So don't rule that out either. A place to visit. I have an interesting trip coming up. I've talked about it before, but I'm taking a bunch of folks on the Danube River. We're going to go to Budapest, in Vienna, and we're going to end up in Wilshofen, Germany, and then some of us are going to go to Prague afterwards. It'll be a great trip. I'm looking forward to it. But at the very end of the trip, those of us who are doing the post-tour in Prague have an option to visit a place called Terezin. I think that's how you pronounce it. Terezin's a concentration camp. And, you know, from World War II, I'm hoping you know the story. And they're inviting us to go visit it. And I'm going to go. I'm definitely going to go because I feel like those important moments in history, when you can experience them firsthand, you should. And I've never been to an actual concentration camp before. But to me, this is not a tourist visit, and I'm a little torn about it because I don't necessarily want what will probably be an emotional and moving experience to overshadow the fun we're having on the river trip. We were having a discussion about this in one of the Discord channels, and somebody pointed out, well, maybe that's the point. Maybe the point of going to a place like this is to kind of contrast with the touristy stuff you've just done. And yeah, you know, I think that is part of it. So there's no question that I'm going, but it makes me mindful of all the places like this in the world that there are to visit and how you need to approach them differently than if you're, say, going to Disney World or the Grand Canyon or Mount Rushmore or whatever. These are places where history has happened that has changed the world. And so a concentration camp is a very easy example. Another one is in Missoula, Montana. I don't even think it's open to the public, but Fort Missoula, on the second floor of one of the buildings, has the court where many Italians and Japanese folks were put in internment camps during World War II. Not a great moment in U.S. history, and one that we don't spend enough time talking about, especially the fact that there were Italians who were interred, because they found themselves in the U.S. when the war broke out and basically had no place to go. They were considered possible enemy elements and put in concentration camps. Internment camps. There is a difference. Some people think that difference isn't as great as it should have been, but there is a difference. At any rate, when you visit these places, they impact you differently. You can be awed by the majesty of the Grand Canyon. You can be impressed by the work it must have taken to carve out Mount Rushmore. And you can be super impressed by the crazy stuff that goes on in Disney as they empty your wallet. But to see a place in history where such things happen, it's a different experience. And I've been to several of these. And I've been to Masada in Israel, which is sadly not a place I would visit today. And that's a controversial place because there's competing narratives about what actually happened there. But when you're standing on top of Masada, you can look down and you can see Roman reinforcements that the Romans built. You can actually see them still there. And it's pretty hard to just, you know, take a picture and send a postcard and check off a place you visited. Unless you're somebody with no introspection whatsoever, which is fine. You do you. But for me, this is you know, a place that will change how I look at the world forever. And so my place to visit this week is to consider visiting these places. And sometimes they're where you least expect it. For example, when I was driving around visiting all the auroras down south, I kept encountering the Trail of Tears. You just see a sign on the road that would say Trail of Tears, and you realize that you're traveling along in comfort at 75 miles an hour when people were forced to walk this under horrendous conditions as they were pushed out of their land to a new land that would later be taken away from them again. These little moments of history are everywhere, and I find them poignant, and don't overlook them. They may not be as flashy or as impressive as many of the national parks or other touristy things, but their impact can be even greater. Tech Talk. So this week, Al and Isabel, who do their own podcast, wanted to talk about leaks in your van. And I thought, you know what? That's a great topic. So I'm just going to let them go from here, and they're going to take a deep dive into leaks.
All right, so picture this. You're dealing with, oh man, you know, the feeling, a leaky van. And it's not just any van. It's your trusty 2017 Ford Transit, your home on wheels. Talk about stress.
Not the vibe we're going for, that's for sure.
No, not at all. But instead of spiraling down a Google rabbit hole today, we're doing things a little differently, a little more focused, you know?
Yeah, we're all about bridging that gap between, like, the official stuff you read and what it's really like out there in the wild, van life wild, that is.
Exactly. So we've got, on the one hand, this super thorough guide from the RAC. Think of it like the UK's version of AAA.
Yep, the real deal.
And then, for that extra layer of realness, we're tapping into some wisdom from the van life pros themselves. Reddit, of course.
Where else, right?
Seriously. But, okay, the RAC, they waste no time getting to the point, which I appreciate. Their guide, like right off the bat, says not all leaks are created equal. Just because you see a puddle doesn't mean it's an immediate DEFCON 1 situation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're big on doing a little detective work first, you know, like before you totally panic confirm the source. Is it actually coming from your van?
Oh, good point.
Could be left over from another vehicle. You never know.
Right. Or maybe your neighbor spilled the, I don't know, whatever.
Happens to the best of us.
It does. But to actually pinpoint the culprit, they have this tip that seems almost too simple. Cardboard.
Low tech, always reliable. Just slide a piece under your van to catch those drips.
Okay, makes sense, but why?
Because, my friend, different fluids, they tell different stories, you know? Yeah. It's all about that visual cue.
Right, the color of the leak, that's key. So let's break it down. Color-coded leak alert system, what are we most worried about? What should have us hitting the panic button?
Okay, so anything amber, multicolored, that's a big red flag, no pun intended.
Literally.
Literally, yeah. That's probably going to be gasoline or diesel, and chances are, honestly, you'll smell it before you see it.
Oh, yeah.
But either way, fuel leaks, huge safety hazard, flammable, not something to mess around with.
No, not at all.
Get that checked out by a pro, like yesterday.
Definitely do not want to be playing with fire.
Nope.
Okay, what about red fluid? Is that ever good news?
Honestly. Not really. Red usually means it's transmission fluid. You'll usually find this towards the middle or front of your van. And driving with a transmission leak, oh man, that's asking for trouble.
Yeah, I bet.
Seriously, you're looking at some major damage, so nipping that in the bud, crucial.
And probably not cheap to fix either, right?
Let's just say prevention is your friend here.
For sure. Speaking of potentially pricey repairs, what about brown or black fluid, the dreaded? I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's typically engine oil. Now, a little bit of an oil leak, that might be something you can handle with a little DIY action. But you got to be on top of those oil levels, monitoring those.
Right.
If it's more than a few drops or you're just not comfortable under the hood, mechanic time.
Yeah, better safe than sorry, especially with something as vital as engine oil.
Yeah.
Okay, so far, not a lot of good news in the color department. But how about this? Reddish brown with a sweet, almost burnt smell. That seems oddly specific.
It is a weird one, right?
Yeah.
Turns out that unique combo, that's your power steering fluid springing a leak.
Really?
Yep. And this is kind of interesting. You can technically still drive with a minor leak here, but don't let that fool you. It's not a free pass. Keep pushing it with low power steering fluid. You're going to cause some damage. Not worth it.
Yeah. No kidding. Okay. Last color on the RAC's list. This one I feel like we've all encountered at some point.
Yeah.
Greenish yellow, sometimes other colors too, but with that same sweet smell.
Ah, that's your coolant. And you know, it's not always that bright green you might be thinking of.
Right.
These days, it comes in all sorts of funky colors, so don't let that throw you off. But that sweet smell, that's your giveaway. And coolant leaks, those are not something you want to ignore.
Makes sense. Got to keep that engine cool, right?
Yeah, exactly. Ignoring a coolant leak, it's like, I don't know, playing chicken with your engine. You might get away with it for a bit, but it's going to catch up with you.
And then you're in trouble.
Big time.
So definitely not a DIY situation.
I wouldn't unless you're a seasoned mechanic.
Agreed. Okay, so we've covered the color spectrum of potential van-related breakdowns, but the RAC, they also mentioned brake fluid, which, I mean, that's a whole other level of scary.
Absolutely. Brown, slippery fluid, that's your brake fluid, and if you see that leaking, do not, I repeat, do not drive your van.
Okay, noted.
Get it towed, straight to a mechanic, no exceptions, brakes are non-negotiable.
Safety first, for sure. Okay, so that's the official word from the REC, which, honestly, super helpful. But now, let's get into those real-world van life trenches tips. Reddit time.
This is where it gets good. We're talking about tried and true tricks from people who live this life every day.
Exactly. And they had some pretty ingenious solutions for finding those leaks that just refused to be found. One of the most common suggestions, simulate a downpour.
Makes sense, right? You're not sure where the water's getting in, create a controlled environment, hose, car wash, or if you're lucky enough, just wait for an actual rainy day.
I like it. Use what you got. And then to zero in on those drips, the Redditors, they had a surprisingly low-tech solution, toilet paper.
It does sound kind of weird at first, but it's actually brilliant.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So you basically tape up strips of toilet paper in suspect areas, you know, near seams, around windows, places like that.
Makes sense.
Leave it there for a while, especially during your little fake rainstorm.
So if you come back and the toilet paper is wet, or, well, dry then.
You found your leak's entry point. Simple, effective, cheap. Can't beat that.
Okay, that I love. But this one blew my mind a little bit. Flower power. Tell me I heard that wrong.
Nope, you heard right. Apparently, dusting your van's walls, especially those areas prone to condensation or leaks with flour or cornstarch, it can actually help you spot those hidden water trails.
So the water absorbs into the powder and then leaves a trail. Oh, wow. Next level problem solving. I am both incredibly impressed and a little terrified to try that. Okay, any other Reddit gems we should know about, especially since we're dealing with a Ford Transit here?
Yeah, actually one more that really stood out, and it's super relevant. So Ford Transits, especially your model year, they're known to have some weak points around the roof caps, trim moldings, even those bumper clips.
Interesting. So those seams and joints where different materials meet, those are prime suspect zones.
Exactly. Highlights how important it is to understand the, I guess you could say, the quirks and vulnerabilities of your particular van.
Right, right. Knowledge is power. Okay, so we've got all these strategies for finding and, you know, really getting to know our leaks. What happens next? What's the game plan?
So you've basically got this whole arsenal of leak hunting knowledge now, right?
We're like leak detectives at this point.
Exactly. But the important thing to remember, not every leak means you're calling a tow truck.
Right. Some need a little more urgency than others. Mm.
Exactly. Like we talked about, fuel leaks, brake fluid, anything that even hints at a safety issue, those are non-negotiables. Get a professional involved.
Absolutely. No messing around with those. But what about, say, a bit of condensation or a minor oil leak that you're keeping a close eye on?
That's where all this information really comes in handy. You're not just like panicking at the first sign of a drip. You can actually assess the situation, maybe try some of those Reddit tricks, pinpoint the source.
Armed with my toilet paper and flour, ready to go.
See? There you go. And even if it does end up being a mechanic situation, at least you're going in informed.
Right. I know what I'm dealing with, what to ask.
Exactly.
Okay, so huge shout out to the RAC. Their guide was seriously helpful. And of course, the Van Life Redditors. You guys are the real MVPs. The flower trick, I still can't get over that.
It's genius.
Total game changer. And I think it speaks to like the spirit of van life. You know, you're faced with a problem. You got to get creative. You find a way.
For sure. Sometimes the simplest solutions are the best ones.
So true. Okay, before we wrap up, one last thought for everyone out there. Let's say you've done your leak investigation, you're feeling super empowered, and you're thinking, I can totally fix this myself.
DIY mode activated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, but always, always proceed with caution.
Couldn't agree more.
Do your research, make sure the fix you're looking at, it's right for your van, your specific leak, don't cut corners, and if there's even a tiny bit of doubt, call a professional.
Better safe than sorry, especially when it's your home on wheels we're talking about.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into the world of leaky vans. Hopefully you're feeling a little more informed, a little less intimidated, and definitely ready to tackle whatever drips or puddles come your way.
Happy travels, everyone.
Safe travels. Safe travels. All right, that's it for us. See you on the next deep dive.
Resource recommendation. So, folks, what you just listened to was made by AI. That was all AI. There's no real people there. All that advice came from a single Reddit thread that I fed it. I just took a Reddit thread, put the URL into an AI tool, and said, make a podcast. And it did. And that's it. That was all the work I had to do. And I just thought, we're entering a new world of AI here, and heck, you don't need me to tell you about it. It's all over the news and everything, and there's a lot of hyperbole, and AI is going to take over the world. Skynet, Terminator's at your door. Yeah. All right, let's keep it real here for a minute. There are some AI tools that are getting very interesting, and the one I wanted to talk about this week is called Notebook LM. The address is notebook, the letters LM, .google.com. It's free for now. It takes all these sources that you feed it and lets you query them. For example, you could give it the Wikipedia articles for every state in the country, and then you could ask it, which state has the most population. And then you could ask it questions that you couldn't ask Google, such as which state has the 47th most population? Or which state's populations have odd numbers? Or, I mean, you could just imagine anything you want because you're restricting your searches just to the data you gave it. And as an added feature to Notebook LM, they've created this generate audio thing, which creates what you just heard. The AI will analyze all the data that you've given it and then create a podcast called a deep dive with two people talking about the thing. And they're not simply summarizing, they're making inferences. It's early days yet, and you can certainly find things that it isn't perfect. My wife finds it very cringeworthy to listen to. She finds the voices very smarmy and doesn't want to hear them. And, you know, I get that. That's fine. But holy cow, folks, when I first encountered this, I was like, heck, why am I doing a podcast? All I have to do is feed this thing, you know, a place topic and a tech talk topic and, you know, and just have it generate it. And I could be done with my podcast in 3 minutes. I'm not doing that. I will continue to yap at you because I'm not quite ready to be replaced by AI. But heck, a whole segment of this podcast that you just listened to, I think, was fairly effectively replaced by AI. They were a little long-winded, they were a little too chummy, etc. But the content was there, and I didn't have to do any work at all to create it. So if you're interested in this stuff, go ahead and check out notebooklm.google.com and just play with it. And this is a very early tool. The UI isn't great. So I'll give you some instructions. Feed it some sources. And if you want to generate audio, click on the button that says Notebook Guide. This is not obvious. This is in the lower right. Click on Notebook Guide, and you will see a button there that says Generate. And that will generate the deep dive conversation with two hosts. Again, it's brand new. It only can be the way it is. You only have those two hosts. You can't change the language or anything. But yeah, pretty impressive. Maybe a little bit scary. Thanks to Hiker for turning me on to that. Thank you very much for listening to episode 233. Music, as always, is by Simon Wegg. And special thank yous to Al and Isabel, two people who've never existed, for the Tech Talk segment. And until next time, a poem written by what was an early form of AI. This is in The Policeman's Beard is Half Constructed, the first book ever generated by a computer in 1984. And the poem goes, Bill sings to Sarah. Sarah sings to Bill. Perhaps they will do other dangerous things together. They may eat lamb or stroke each other. They may chant of their difficulties and their happiness. They have love, but they also have typewriters. That is interesting.